Hello and welcome to episode 6 of Game Train. I'm Callan.
And I'm Carl.
And on this week's ep, we talk about AFL Evolution, Wonder Boy Remake. We talk a bit more about that stupid game you played. I'm not even going to try and say it.
Come on, again. Say it.
No,
say it.
I can't say it. Mario Kart it was, 8 Deluxe.
That's not the one. Come on, please say it. Don't cut this part out. This is going to be my favorite part when I listen.
Puyo.
That's like 80% it. That's pretty good. That's a pass.
We
would have graduated.
Thanks. We review Prey. We go looking at more games of our lives, this time 2000 to 2004, and we answer your questions.
Oh, yeah.
But first, the news.
BioWare's Mass Effect Andromeda team has been sadly demoted back to a support team. Andromeda was their first big game that they were sort of taking the reins on, and I guess it was their trial, if you will, and apparently didn't go so well. But that's all right. I think there are, you know, other things, and they've got that their new secret IP out there, secret/not-secret IP in the works, so that looks pretty cool.
Rugby League 4 is coming this year. From Big Ant, which is an Australian developer, and they've developed the past games in the series, coming to PlayStation 4, Xbox One, and PC later on this year.
The dock for the Switch, not the console itself, but just the dock that connects to the TV, will be available by itself on the 26th of May for a low price of $129.95. I'm not sure if I'm excited.
A bit expensive, but yep.
A bit much for a HDMI converter, but I mean, that's kind of...
And with EVE3 on the horizon next month, sort of the rumors starting to amount there, and Bethesda have released a little map of a theme park they've called Bethesda Land with a bunch of their IPs on it, but they have two under construction parts of the theme park, leading to speculation they're going to announce two new games.
Oh, I am so down for that.
So that's pretty cool.
Hmm.
And,
yep.
And of course, the other big rumors that have been flown out in the last week is that of the next Assassin's Creed.
Yes, that's right. And we don't normally put rumors in our news section, but... there's just been so many on this one, and they've confirmed that the screenshots that have been released, which confirm the Egypt setting as well, have been confirmed as real. And then here's an interesting one. Of the last 13 Assassin's Creed mainline games, 12 of them were leaked.
Really?
So, yeah. So
only,
I don't know.
Only the first one wasn't then. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. I don't even know if that one was the one that wasn't. Maybe that first one was.
Do you think it's just the one dude just sitting there, just sending out carrier pigeons with pictures from the office?
I'm at this time where it's like, you know, if five or six of them were leaked, I'd be a bit, you know, okay with believing it was a mystery. But 12 of 13 is kind of making me think, like, this is just your marketing. Like, by now we get it. We know Ubisoft is doing this.
Or it's just Jim every time they still haven't caught him.
Yep. That's true.
Anyway, yeah. So, on to what we've been playing.
Boom. Right. I've had a pretty quiet week of the old games.
Yeah. You're not been doing much?
Not a lot. You know, just chilling.
That's where you can put in your lyrical plug.
Oh, no, I don't know where that fits.
Oh.
It's just such another world. I'd have to just get into the whole thing. I don't know who this lyrical ninja is. Anyway. I tried for the first time the Talos Principle, which has been out for a bajillion years, but it was very... heavily discounted on Steam last week, so I thought I'd jump on and check it out because people have been saying that if you like Portal, then you'd like this game. And well, that's me and pretty much anyone else, I guess. But yeah, it was really nice. It It looks really awesome. I mean, it's quite basic in its sort of setting. It's just a first-person puzzle game. You play as a robot. You can switch it to third person if you want. It is very reminiscent of Portal, except you're using sort of lasers and shields to protect them and make patterns to escape out of rooms. And that's, you know, if it was just a puzzle game, it'd be a lot of fun in itself. But there's also this whole existence thing in it that makes you question life itself. And you're playing as a robot, and there's all these questions about AI and about self and consciousness. And it's a really deep and beautiful game. And yeah, I loved it. I didn't quite finish it. I got very far. You have to climb these mystical towers, and you're allowed into different rooms, and there's this like overlord speaking to you who I don't quite know who it is yet. And but I'm really interested, and I love it. I really love it. I wish I got into it a lot sooner.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's Talos Principle. If you haven't checked it out, jump on Steam right now. It's all of about $7, I believe, and it's brilliant. Brilliant, especially for its price.
Cool. I've been playing AFL Evolution, which is the new AFL game which came out. It broke Date, which was hilarious because no games break street dates anymore.
Yeah, no good games still don't. Someone didn't get a free copy.
Oh, no. stop it. developed by Wicked Witch, who developed the last AFL game that came out several years ago. It's out on PS4 and Xbox One. It's coming to PC soon. I've got mixed feelings about this game. I don't know how I feel about it. Like, I love AFL so much. And then it's like a game's coming out, and, you know, it's only like every so often that a game will come out for it, you know, for that sport. And then you play the game and you're like, okay.
Yeah, I could see how.
But then I keep playing it, you know, like it feels more like AFL Live 2.5 rather than a full new game. Like, it almost feels like they've used a lot of things from the old engine into this one. I originally wanted to do our feature game on this, our review, and, you know, when I started playing this game, I just thought to myself, oh, Kyle would have already ejected the disc and taken it back to the shop.
Wow. That's not a thing I do.
Before the first bounce of the ball, and I was just like, oh, okay.
I would have done it at looking at the cover.
There are a lot of bugs. There are a lot of bugs in the game. Like, it didn't happen to me, but other people have reported that players' names are being switched around. So, like, yeah, just makes no sense at all. I've experienced bugs where the commentary's like, you know, you kick a goal and you're still losing by like 5 goals or whatever, and it goes, and you're now in, you know, and Carlton's now in front. I'm like, no, I'm still 5 goals behind.
that's awkward.
You know, it's just lazy things like this. The commentary gets really repetitive really fast. They've used one of my favorite commentators who retired from the game last year, Dennis Cometti. Really like him, but I don't think they recorded enough lines in this game. Like, it's so repetitive. And then he'll say the same line over and over again at times, and it's just really awkward, especially if it's one of these, like, cliche sort of lines that he says, or Cometti-isms or whatever people call them. But, like, and he says, like, the same one, like, 3 times in a row, and you're like, yep, okay, all right, cool. Look, what's cool about the game is that, like, you know, all the teams are in it, you know, all 18 clubs, all the VFL sides are in it, TAC sides are in it, or TAC Cup, and all that. The women's league's in it as well, which is really cool. Yeah, that's all great. And then you get into, like, career mode, and you create a player, and you're playing as like one player on the field in a certain position and all that. Now, I had a bug in the game where it would come up as my name as unknown when I tried to put my name in, which was really frustrating. But I know how that was fixed now, but still, it's just something that shouldn't happen. I saw a lot of people talking online about it, like, I can't change my name from unknown, which is really weird. And then when you're playing the game as your created player, so you just play as that one guy, right? You know, in AFL, there's a lot of rotations. Players get put on the bench, taken off the bench, you know, heaps of times throughout a game, right? To give them rests and all that. Well, in this, when you get put on the bench, you can sit there and still watch the game taking place, but you can't skip forward to when you're allowed back on the field again. So if you've been put on the bench for 5 minutes, you're just sitting there, just looking at the field and watching the computer just play kick to kick.
Oh, wow. And then you can simulate
the rest of the game, but it goes to the end of the game when you do that.
Oh, if you want to fast forward it.
Yeah, yeah, it goes to the end of the game. So once you get interchanged off, which is not up to you at all, the computer will just do it once your character stamina gets down to a certain level.
Yeah.
You pretty much got to sit there and wait. Look, I'm still playing it. I really like online. It's fun online because I think the computer can be quite cheap when you're playing against the computer. The computer will constantly mark the ball, and the marking is actually a real pain in the ass. Like, I've gotten better at it now. But then the computer will have like 10 shots on goal, but they'll kick points every time. And you're like, but that's not right. It's just...
It's like they dominate
infield play, but then they can't convert. But it's probably on the harder difficulties, and they start converting everything as well.
It's like playing Worms against the computer.
Yeah, yeah.
And they use that bazooka.
Yeah.
And it turns corners on you.
Yeah, I don't know. It's best when I'm playing against other people online. That's where I've gotten the most fun. Look, if you do like AFL, go give it a try. I know a lot of people don't like it, but...
Sorry.
I see
what you did there.
Sorry,
I was laughing at your give it a try. I was
Yeah, I know. Look, I'm going to keep playing it. But look, I really hope they do develop another one next year and use this as the broad base and build up on it. So you're still on Mario Kart, I see, as well.
I've been playing Puyo Puyo Tetris and Mario Kart 8 Deluxe. You'll get there.
Yeah.
If you just play the demo, they actually teach you how to say it.
Really?
Well, they don't teach you, but they just say it so much that you have to know.
Okay.
But the thing I've been really... I've been putting hours into Mario Kart 8 Deluxe. Being on the road a lot, on tour with a bunch of other mates, it's just always something there to do. And Zelda wasn't really selling my Switch to my mates and my group. It was like, I was stoked. But when you're just sitting around and you're bored or you're waiting or you're on a 7-hour car ride and there's two bandmates in the back and they're both just watching you play Zelda, it's just not the same. But now I've got to really do things like Tetris and Mario Kart, which are just pick up and go classics that everyone loves, and I'm just so excited for like more indie games and more little fun games. Like, I didn't expect to get this many hours out of Tetris in 2017 at all. Like, I didn't see that coming, and there's going to be so many more hours. It's just so fun and funny. And also, just to mention, I played it for the first time in 3 and 4 players, and the game is beautiful in 3 and 4 players, the Puyo Puyo Tetris, because it splits up your Tetris screen. As most of you know, Tetris is like a sort of portrait-shaped game where everything falls from the top to the bottom, so they split the screen up in 4 columns, and it's just everything's still really big and easy to see. It's not like, you know, like a window like Mario Kart is, so it's really pleasing to the eye and easy and fun. And yeah, I've been really enjoying it.
That's cool. Something else on the Switch I've been playing is the Wonder Boy the Dragon's Trap remake. The remake of the... it's more of a remaster than a remake.
True.
Because a remake would be building a game from the ground up. But no, so it's the remaster of the 1987 Master System game. I loved this game when I was a kid, and I was excited when this was coming out. But, you know, with all things, you sort of get a little, you know, wary of things.
Nostalgia.
Yeah. Man, you know what? They nailed this game. 100%.
Oh, it looks just stunning.
It is so good. Like, pretty much what they have done with this game... How I was saying it's a remaster is that they've taken the old game with the old exact engine, right? Everything is the same, but then they've put a new coat of paint on it. They've made it to 2017 art style, you know? It's this really, really nice sort of cartoon art style to it. And it's just fun. And it's exactly like the old game. And they've updated all the music, so they've taken the old tunes and made them, you know, bit more modern, and same with the sound effects and all that. But then what you can do, and this is so much fun, is from a tap of a button, you can make it then look like the 1987 version. So the screen just wipes, and then suddenly you're playing the original again. And you can switch the music back to the original and the sound effects. So if you want to go down that nostalgia road, you can. Then you like go, you know what? I'd rather look at some more cartoony and cleaner graphics. So you hit the button again, back to modern day stuff.
That's so much fun. I remember when they did that with the two Halo remakes.
Mm-hmm.
And I spent so much time in the game just going from location to location and going, all right, what did this used to look like? Ooh, yes. What does it look like now?
I've been doing that every time I go into a new area, because it's like a desert area, water area, caves and all this. Switch it across, have a look. Oh, yeah, cool. Switch back to
a new enemy or whatever.
Yeah, new enemy comes along. You go, oh, okay. And you see the new version and you see the old version and all that. And another really cool thing they've done is you can take your old passwords from the 1987 game that you played all those years ago, 30 years ago, and use them on this version. Because it's all built on the original engine.
I mean, who would have those?
I don't know. It's just a really cool feature. And the other cool thing they've done is they've gone back to the original sort of base of this game. And in the original one, you know, you play as Wonder Boy. But this time they've also added in Wonder Girl. And so she's not only in the new art look, right? But you can switch back to the old school and have her in the old pixelated version too.
So they've made an old pixelated one from scratch her.
Yeah, and put her into the game.
That's pretty cool.
Like,
that's very cool.
It's just a really fluid game when it's in like the new sort of graphics and that. The game's hard. Like, I'm like sitting there playing, oh, I'm like, this is easy, and I got smashed. I'm like, oh, okay. But yeah, it's great. The developer is called Lizard Cube. And I really hope they do more remakes of games like this, remasters of games like this, because I think this is a great way if they went back and grabbed some old classics from like the 80s and early 90s and just put like that fresh coat of paint over it. You know, you can still keep the same old engine, the way the game plays, but you can just make it look nice rather than just going, oh, we'll put it in widescreen.
Yeah, well, again, and they did that with Monkey Island 1 and 2.
Mm-hmm.
And it was brilliant. And like, same thing with if you switch it back to the old one, it had the old sort of music, and then you switch it back to, you know, the modern one, and it's got sort of the live band and voice acting. And when you go back to the old one, it's just got text and old pixelated graphics. I think that's such a cool idea, because it's not like, it's showing you the improvement too. It's not trying to hide behind nostalgia and hope that you just, you know, don't remember it any better. Or it's like going like, this is what it used to look like. Here's what we've done with it. It's also showing the work they've done. I really appreciate that way of doing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the game's not overly long. It's a few hours long. I'm almost at the end of the game. But it's fun. It's a great nostalgia trip. And if you've never played the game before, go have a go. Because it's fun. It's a fun game. It's challenging. It's out now on PlayStation 4, Xbox One, Switch, and it's soon coming to PC as well.
Nice.
All right, on to our feature game this week, which is Prey.
The outbreak can be contained. Earth can be spared. It has to be me. I know what's coming.
Some people will never understand what you can do.
Prey is developed by Arkane Studios and is published by Bethesda, and is out on PS4, Xbox One, and PC. It's a reimagining, they're calling it, of Prey, which came out in 2006, which was kind of a totally different game. But anyway,
completely just the same in name.
Bethesda took over the rights of the IP and then gave it to Arkane Studios, and they went and developed it. So it's pretty much how that came about. So it's a first-person shooter. You're on board a space station, and there are aliens to kill, pretty much.
Yeah.
That's pretty much the gist of it, without giving any sort of story spoilers away. If you've ever played Bioshock or System Shock, it's got a very sort of I guess you could call them the shock games feel to it, with a splash of Half-Life thrown in there as well. Like some bits I just felt, wow, I'm almost playing like another Half-Life game.
Yeah, that's true.
It's probably the best way to sort of describe it. Like you have your normal guns and weapons, but then you have some powers as well. Like you're getting like Bioshock and, you know, you got like electric powers and fire powers and things like that.
Well, it's like Arkane's, you know, other two very obvious games, the Dishonored and Dishonored 2. It feels and looks a lot like them, and both of those were weapon tree and power tree based, and you built whichever one you preferred, and that kind of similar style as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's fun, you know, like it's hard. The game's hard, like
I've died brutal hard
so many times, and I'm playing on normal, and the game gives you nothing, like throughout the entire game, and I'm right near the end of the game now. I felt through pretty much most of the game, I've been struggling with ammo or getting stuff for my powers, or I just feel weak against the enemy. Things like that. Like it's not a walk in the park at all. And every time you feel like you're going that little edge, now you just get put straight back in your box again. Every time.
Yeah, that's so true. I love it. It's like, it is really hard. It just like for me, playing through Dishonored and Dishonored 2, I played through them with a no killing and never being seen playthrough.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like me creating the challenge. Yes. And in that, what it kind of did was turn saving and quick saving into what's almost a gameplay mechanic that you kind of need and learn how to do. And it's not just about doing it all the time. It's about doing it in the right places. Because if you just do it all the time, you get yourself stuck really easily in like shitty situations where you just have low health and, you know, you got to go back and you've lost so much stuff. So it all becomes part of the thing. And in those games, I created the challenge myself and it was fun and exciting. And in this game, they're almost forcing it on you because I feel like I'm playing it the same way where I'm using quick save and like I just press pause and quick save and then continue playing and like everything really quickly and every little move I make and each piece of ammo I find or every bit of breathing space I get, I'm like, all right, everything is clear. No one can see me. Okay, save. All right, now take a few steps. Still good. Okay, save.
My favorite thing in this game is when you collect materials and you put them into the... So in this game, you can grab... yeah. You can pretty much pick up all random things, carry them along, you've got an inventory space, and then you put it into this almost big trash compactors on the way, which recycles them into these little cubes, which then you use to create items from. Just the using of that big recycling bin every time is just my favorite bit. You put it all in there, the machine scans through, then out the other side comes all these little cubes and spheres and things like that, and you pick them all up, and then you take them over and make items out of them. Best bit of the game.
Yeah. Oh, it's very Minecraft, isn't it?
Yeah.
The way you put it in a sort of grid, and there's like a grid, and you have to put these little bit of this kind of material and a bit of synthetic whatever in there, and five of these, and just make an L shape and press enter, and out comes this like intricate weapon or health or something.
Yeah, it's fun. Like, you know, the game sort of prides itself on the exploration part, I feel. I could have probably already finished the game now, but I've been going around doing side quests and exploring, and when you're exploring, you're finding more side quests and on it goes sort of thing. And there's different ways you can complete certain puzzles. So you might, you know, you might come up to like a wall and or like a doorway, and there'll be like an electric sort of zap going over the top of it. Now, if you run through that zap, you're going to die. But if you've got a repair skill, you can repair the broken circuits and the electricity goes away. But if you haven't put points into research, you can pull out your glue gun and... is it glue gun?
Yeah, G-L-O-O.
Yeah, glue gun, and shoot this sort of, I don't know, I guess goop at it, and it will stop shooting electricity for about 10 seconds, so you've got like this 10-second window that you can just run through the door sort of thing. So there's, you know, there's different ways like that, or other things, like other times you can, you know, if you put skills in hacking, you can hack open doors, or if you don't have any points in hacking, you have to find the key card instead kind of thing.
Yeah, I love that. And that, again, that's very much what they did with Dishonored and Dishonored 2, is the multiple paths you can do. So instead of being, and it makes it feel like this different version of open world, like it's not an open world game. It kind of is, like you're just in this huge station, very much like BioShock, where every room was kind of interconnected and you just learned how all the rooms connect and where they all are, and each of them is this big area. But it's so open in that there's just so many things you can do. And like things like that glue gun, you can freeze animals with it. You can shoot the wall in a diagonal, you know, direction, and it all hardens to make like a staircase. So you can climb up and reach things that you should definitely not be able to reach.
Mm-hmm.
But up there is where you find vents to get around enemies if you're not strong enough to beat them.
Yep.
There's just... there's a lot of replayability and creativity.
Another very cool thing, one of the first powers you get is the ability to mimic objects.
Yeah, the main bad guys do, which we should probably explain.
So like, this is where I feel the Half-Life thing is. Like, there's these spider-like creatures that look very much like head crabs, but they can mimic into item, like objects. And like, so you walk in a room and you walk past a desk with like a coffee cup on it, and the next second the coffee cup will morph out into this thing and then jump at you. Like, there's been a lot of jump scares for me in this game. Oh,
I have changed my undies at least 4 times in the last couple of days.
So easy. Every time you walk in a room, like, you sort of look around the room like, all right, what could be like a mimic this time? So yeah, there's a lot of that going on. But then you also get that same power, so then you can start mimicking objects too. But as when you're a coffee cup, you can move around as a coffee cup.
Yeah.
So I've like turned myself into like a chair before and like walked past bad guys with a chair. Or you can use like turning into a coffee cup and sneaking through like a sneaky little gap that you couldn't normally fit through. But yeah, look, it's a fun game. The story's pretty cool, but you have to go looking for it. Like, the game doesn't give you everything in the story. That you find a lot of, like, audio logs and emails, and you start learning about the people that were on this sort of space facility, you know, when sort of...
I like the main story, though. What, like, the bits that, you know, about... I don't know, it's a hard game to review because you can't talk about the story.
Yeah, we don't want to drop story spoilers in there, because a lot of fun is discovering it all sort of for yourself sort of thing.
And it is fun. And I do, as tedious as it sounds, I do recommend reading those emails and looking through it, because it's half the fun, because you're looking for the, you know, like the codes to safes and, you know, all those kind of things, like keys and and they're fun, and passwords and whatnot.
Yes, exactly. And then you find out about people, and then it might give you a little hint for something, or... yeah, there's a lot to find. But yeah, I'm going to give it 8 out of 10.
Nice. Nice. Ah, see, I had a bit of trouble with giving it a rating, because... I don't know. This one's a bit tough. I'm going to give it a 7.5 carriages out of 10 for Game Train of the week.
All right.
I felt it was a beautiful game, but the first few hours, just, I don't know if it's a get good kind of thing, but I felt extremely underpowered, and I couldn't get into it as deeply as I wanted, because I spent most of the time panicking.
Yeah.
While I wanted to be because I was very impressed with everything and looking at like, just exploring, and I felt I could do that so much more in these other, like BioShock. I love that world so much, and it's because I got to be in it so much and look at things, and I mean, you know, it was a different kind of challenge, and I wanted to do that a bit more with Prey, and then by the time I could, I was not over it, but I'd seen the things, you know, briefly with running for my life. But yeah, it's the only thing the only downside was that the first few hours was a bit underpowered, and not in like an Abe's Odyssey on purpose kind of way, just in a like, am I shit? Is this hard? Is this normal? You know?
Yep.
But it is fun.
And that brings us to Games of Our Lives.
Like sands through the hourglass, so are the games of our lives.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so this week we're going from 2000 to 2004. Let's do it. 2000.
Oh, let's hit it.
Tony Hawk Pro Skater 2.
Oh, see, I went with Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 2. It was the best game of that year, easily.
2001.
All right. Final Fantasy 10.
Serious?
Dude, it takes up most of my arm. You know how I talk about those games every now and then?
Yeah.
This is like my
whole... But then
whole...
friggin' Astro Boy takes up your arm too.
There is no Astro Boy in my arm. Don't let me do this.
Mine was Grand Theft Auto 3. I thought this game pretty much started off the whole open world thing. You know, this was it. You know, this is the one that everyone went, oh, wow. And pretty much so many games have been built up from what this game was. I think it was, like, revolutionary in sort of the video game world. It was just such a monumental game. That's why it goes in there, just because what it did.
Oh, of course. See, for me... my Final Fantasy X thing is that, you know, lately they've been talking about the sales for Breath of the Wild superseding and being like outselling the sales of the Switch. And that was just the Breath of the Wild Switch version, not even including the Wii U. And people are saying like, that's weird. Why is that? And some are saying it's because maybe some people are doing the collector's versions and stuff. My answer is Final Fantasy X. I bought that game, I think, nearly 4 months before I bought the PS2 that plays it, because I was so excited and I just wanted to own it. And I know I didn't have a PS2, but my God, I wanted Final Fantasy X. And also, I wanted to buy it before my friend Deggs. All right, 2002.
For me, it was Warcraft 3, Reign of Chaos.
Oh, yeah.
And I love this RTS. I think the Warcraft 3 storyline as a whole... was my favorite sort of story thread they've had throughout the Warcraft series. It was really, really cool.
I've
played through the campaign a couple of times on this. I really dig it. I love the characters they introduced into the lore.
Nice. Mine was the marriage of the two most favorite things in my life, Kingdom Hearts. Yeah, I mean, Final Fantasy and Disney, I mean, that was as a person. No, not in that version. I'm sure he'll pop up maybe on some subsequent mystery game. Anyway, 2003.
Okay, I feel like I'm repeating myself here, but Warcraft 3, The Frozen Throne. This was the expansion to Warcraft 3, Reign of Chaos.
You picked an expansion.
Yeah, but it's a standalone game
as
well. That
was the game of that year, of 2003.
Yes,
was an expansion of the previous year.
yes, pretty much. It concluded that story arc, and it was so freaking good where it went.
Well, I went with The Legend of Zelda Wind Waker.
Oh, yeah, that game was pretty good too.
That just, as an actual game, that really impressed me. It blew my mind, and I think it was the... I don't know if it was the first, but it was the best example to me as how Nintendo, after the 64, had pretty much given up on trying to be this powerhouse console that it used to be, like with the Super Nintendo and the Nintendo Entertainment System before it. And it was now like not about graphics and power, but it was about games and fun. And I thought, well, how are you going to still, you know, as a little kid, you just think maybe we're not going to get Nintendos anymore. And then this game made you realize, like, no, they have something different. They have this charm, and the way it just moved perfectly and swimming in the water. And it was just gorgeous and a huge world. I loved it.
Very cool.
Yeah.
2004.
Metal Gear Solid 3 Snake Eater. Ooh. It is still one of my all-time favorite games.
Oh, man.
Ever.
How it built up towards the end was friggin' incredible.
Just what a story and what a thing to be in and part of.
I think the climax of that game was my favorite one in the
Metal
Gear series.
Oh, and the flowers.
Oh, you know? No, I mean, just like when you're fighting the Shagahat at the base and you're like, man, it keeps going. And then you're in the field and then you're on the plane. It just keeps going.
And there's betrayal and after there's betrayal.
And it just keeps going. It's like, who's going to betray who next? This story
and
is
you
just
don't see
out
them
of control.
Coming.
Yeah, exactly. Like, first time through, you're like, what?
Yeah. Oh, I just loved it. And everything from the, like, eating the animals and crawling around and changing your camouflage. Oh, that game. It was just It's very close to my all-time favorite game ever.
Wow. So your favorite in the Metal Gear series, you'd say?
Oh, easily.
Yep.
Easily.
I think it's. When I first heard of that game, I was really disappointed because I wanted the story to continue on after 2, right?
Yes, of course.
And when I heard we're going back into, like, you know, it's set in the 80s, is it? Or 70s? 80s.
Yeah, it might be late 70s, early 80s.
I was really disappointed because I'm like, I want this story to conclude. But then when I played it, it added so much more depth to the story.
I mean, you're big boss.
I know.
So good.
It's so good. And then, Metal Gear 4, which I was so hyped for 4, but I still felt 3 was the better overall product.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, 4 was gorgeous, but 3 just...
Yeah.
Just the story. It had this beautiful sort of balance between serious and emotional and quirky and funny. Mm-hmm. Like, it knew it was a game.
Yep.
Oh, God. I could... I won't waste any more time, but man, I could.
For 2004, it was, I feel like I'm repeating myself again, was World of Warcraft this time.
You are the worst guy.
What?
I have such a lovely, colorful, creative list here for my beautiful audience.
Dude,
and my
2004,
passengers.
This game came out. I was still playing it at the start of this year.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. That's fair. Like, what an amazing longevity that game's
had. I keep
going
back to it with expansion after expansion. I think there's 5 or 6 expansions for it now. I just keep going back to it every time, and that's why it's there. Like, Half-Life 2 came out that year, which I think is absolutely an incredible game, but this game gets it just because this was the first... I'd played a little MMO here or two along the way, just sort of put my feet in, but this was the first one that I went right in, and I was like, wow, yeah. Still some of my favorite gaming moments were from this game. Like, that's it for me. And those were the games of our lives this week. Next time we're going to go from 2005 through to 2009.
Nice.
Yeah, catching up.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's going to be...
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know what we'll do without these. They're just so much fun.
Yeah, question time.
All right. Yeah, listener questions. We got one this week.
Hey!
Thank you. If anyone's out there still listening to us, please send some questions and... ask us anything you want, and we'll do our best to answer it on the next podcast. Just jump on our podcast Facebook and message us on there, which is just facebook.com/GameTrainPodcast. Send us a message right on the wall. We'll all see it, and we'll answer your questions right here. Just like Brendan Hawkins did. He says, "Hi, guys. A question for the next podcast. What is your game of shame? That game the rest of the world might think was awful or lame or just totally childish, but that you secretly love. Keep up the great podcasting." Thank you, Brendan.
Thank you, Brendan. Mine for me is from a little movie called Star Wars.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Sounds good.
Star Wars The Phantom Menace.
Oh, right. Okay.
This game came out in 1999. I had it on PC. I loved it. It didn't get very good reviews. A lot of people didn't like it. I really liked it. I think I might have gone through it like twice.
Did you have no other games?
I did, but...
Did your consoles break?
I don't know. It was just a really fun game. I don't know why. I just really enjoyed it.
All right. I guess that's fair. Each to their own.
Yep.
Mine was a nice new age game made in 1983 called Frostbite, which is on the Atari 2600. And it was a strange one because back when it was made in 1983, it wasn't so shameful. But the thing is, I love this game now. And I got it recently, maybe like 4 or 5 years ago on the Xbox 360 on their Atari Classic arcade thing that they had there, and I clocked over 75 hours on an old Atari game, and I don't know how I did it, but I had my younger brothers and friends coming over and looking at my extensive, stupidly extensive collection of amazing current generation games and just thinking, why the hell are you playing this? And they'd ask me, like, what are you doing? How come you've done this every day for the last week? And I didn't really have an answer except for just, I just love that game. I don't know why it's so good. I was telling Callan, I found myself, I was on the, I was third on the worldwide leaderboards. And I didn't realize that. Once I checked the scoreboards, I was like, oh, I can never make it. And I was like, wait, what? I'm third? And that was the end of that. I then played it for weeks and weeks and weeks trying to get first. I never did, but I had a damn good time failing.
Very cool.
So, yeah.
But yeah, thanks very much for the question, Brendan. And I think that can lead us straight into the lame train now, Carl.
Can't it just?
What a great segue. In you go.
Oh, look at that. We got to work on this. Okay, my lame train this week. Oh, my goodness. Okay, so, I mean, and I'm sure a lot of you guys will see the punchline coming, but PS4 and Xbox One have just released Atari Classics Collection, Volume 1. Now, this has 50 Atari games on it. 50 of them, not 30 like the NES Mini. This has 50 games. So I was very, very excited. It was $21. Lots of reviews are saying that's not really worth 50 old 70s and early 80s games because they're all broken and crappy. But I was prepared to pay that for one game alone, which you all know by now, was Frostbite. I have it on 360, but I don't want to pull my 360 out just to play it. I want Frostbite on my Xbox One because I'm crazy. So I nearly pressed buy, but I just Googled it to check all the games. Frostbite wasn't on it. I was furious, but lo and behold, I noticed there was an Atari Classics Collection Volume 2 with another 50, bringing us to 100 total classic Atari games. No Frostbite. Still no Frostbite. The only bloody game I want from it. And then I told Callan this. I texted him because I was in tears in a puddle of sadness and anger. And he said, oh, well, that's cool. Obviously, they have River Run.
River Raid.
River Raid, I should say. No River Raid in 100 games. And I went, oh, this is weird. All right, let's just, you know what? Let's go with obvious. Let's not be quirky. Let's just play Pitfall. No Pitfall. No Kung Fu Master. I don't know how they did this. It's 100 games.
Surely is a 100? Third one on the horizon.
I'm waiting. At that game, I will pay $100 at this stage just for those four, you know?
Yeah.
I just couldn't believe it. What do I want with these 100 shit Atari games? They were shit then, they're shit now. Sorry, Atari. You have four or five good games.
Very good. All right. My lame train this week is, okay, so I went on a plane on the weekend with my Switch, right?
Uh-huh, yeah.
So, you know, was there and I'll order a coffee on the plane and they bring over those little milk things.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. I hate these milk things now. I always used to like them. Anyway,
really?
So I go to open the little thing, being so, so careful. My Switch is on the table in front of me. Oh,
okay.
So, so careful.
Yeah. Good move.
The milk just squirts out anyway, all over the top of my Switch.
Oh, no. Did you have a passenger next to you?
No, I didn't. But to get the air hostess to give me a napkin to clean up my Switch.
Oh, no.
So my lame train is cool. The milk packets on planes.
Yeah,
please make them better so I don't spill milk on my Switch. I know I'm crying over spilt milk.
Nice. No, I like that. I mean, it's game related.
But look, my Switch is okay in the end. Like when I got to my parents' place, we'll get able to clean up with some spray and all that, and it's fine. No damage was done. But yeah, at the time, panic station straight away.
Dude, you are not sounding like a 30-plus-year-old person right now in this. You called the air hostess to get a napkin to clean your little Nintendo that you then took home to your parents and cleaned. I love this.
Yes, playing Wonder Boy at the time. I don't know.
Oh, who wants to grow up?
I know.
Hype train.
All right, Red Dead Redemption 2.
It's still not out yet. Cool.
But my other hype train is, and this is going to sound hypocritical from what I said earlier today.
Oh, don't you dare say your Atari friggin' collection.
No, I don't know. If it was out, that'd be great. I'm not saying it three times. I'm not the type of person that mentions the same game three times in a row in one segment.
Dude, three different games, though.
Okay, no, I did. I didn't say your name. You're neither that type of person. I mean, I'm just talking about a hypothetical douchebag. No, it's the dock for the Switch.
Ah, yes.
I'm so hyped for it, I have to say. Yeah, it is very, very expensive, but in this world where I'll just find a bajillion dollars somewhere, I just love the idea of just pulling the Switch out of the living room and going into my bedroom and slotting it into that TV and then taking it out of that and jumping into the car and driving to a hotel room and slotting into that TV.
Yes.
Yeah.
Very cool. For me, it's the Assassin's Creed Origin rumors. They've got me pretty hyped for the new Assassin's Creed game.
Ah, nice.
I've always enjoyed the series, but yeah, going to Egypt, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is. I can't wait.
Yeah, so I'm really hyped for Ubisoft's proper unveiling of it. Of your live action trailer and then your story trailer and then your gameplay trailer. And then your sort of mechanics trailer and then your launch trailer and then finally the game.
Yeah. There's a lot to go.
But it's kind of exciting that it's sort of almost June now and we're probably going to expect a game around October, November. So, but that is the show for this week. Thank you very much for tuning in. As always,
thank you.
You can like and follow us on our Facebook page and Twitter. Share.
Oh, yeah, we have a Twitter.
Yeah, we do. At Game Train Talk. Share the podcast around. Share it to all your friends. And hopefully they'll share it to their friends. And so on and so forth.
And if you don't like it, tell us why, and we'll fix it.
Yeah. Next week, we're going to be looking at Injustice 2, When Superheroes Go Bad.
And we will be starting the score from the minute we fight each other, and we will tell you what that is next week between myself and Callan.
Exactly.
On the Callan vs. Carl Injustice 2 scoreboard.
Yes, exactly right.
Which I decided right at this very second now.
And also, we're going to record our very first fight on Injustice 2 and upload it to the page as well.
Oh, wow. Okay, it's on.
But yeah,
the very first one. Okay.
Yep. And also, next week we're gonna have a bit of fun with E3 just over the horizon. We're gonna talk about what we think may happen at E3, our predictions that kind of we'd like to see or we think could actually happen.
Yep.
All right.
Nice.
Thanks very much, guys. We'll see you. You'll hear us again in 2 weeks.
We'll see. Thank you, guys. We'll see you. Excellent. Thanks, Callan.
Bye.